The Spinoff Podcast Network. Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today. Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
Kiriro o te motu raro mai kia on the rag. Hei kone ipurangi mō ngā mana wahine. Citizens of the Nation, welcome to On the Rag, a podcast for and about the mana of women. Ko Alex Casey aho, and I am joined on this very, very stormy Wednesday by Michelle A. Court.
Kia ora.
And Leonie Hayden.
Tēnā koutou katoa.
And we are here to chat about the past month in just things that we want to talk about, really.
Stuff and things.
Bit of a chit-chat.
We are here with so many things to the Women's Bookshop. If you live in Auckland, you should go check them out. Go check them out in real life on Ponsonby Road or online, www.thewomansbookshop.co.nz. We have a very exciting giveaway this month. We have two tickets to their 30th birthday party.
Oh, how fantastic.
Eleganza extravaganza.
Can we all go anyway? Can we all buy tickets and go?
I mean, yeah.
I want to.
I think we should go.
I would like to
birthday.
Go.
At the ASB Waterfront Theatre.
Oh, fancy schmancy.
A literary concert. Can you even believe?
I love it. She puts on a good gig, does Carol.
I hope she's going to be like playing the guitar or something.
a bit of jazz reading, you know, with some passion in the background.
I want some slam poetry is what I'm after. Thanks, Carol.
If you'd like to win those two tickets, please check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/ontheragpod. We've also got our private, that peak a little bit there, Tina. Private On The Rag. Community circle of love.
It is. It's an embrace, really. It's a warm cyber embrace.
Oh, that sounds like a sexy
little cuddle
site.
On the information highway.
It's not that kind of a website, though. You can get cyber embraces elsewhere.
Less embracing, more tuggy. But I want. Take that out.
Don't take that out. Yeah. That group is called On The Rag 24/7. If you would like to join, there is one simple question, which is, why do you want to join? But we enjoy proper answers, please. Coming up on this podcast, it's been a pretty crazy month for politicians saying weird things. I don't want to stray into Gone By Lunchtime territory here, which is the Spinoff's political podcast, but we might have to.
We might have to. Because there's a lot of politicians trying to insert their views on things to do with women's bodies and agency into other lives.
A supreme lack of empathy, a lack of ability to imagine being anything other than a middle-aged, middle-class white man. Amazing.
We've also got an interesting insight from Meryl Streep, and incels are getting plastic surgery.
Yoo-hoo!
What's going on there? First of all, let's have a bit of chit-chat, shall we? We were just talking off mic about just, you know, life, and Leonie literally just said, save this for the podcast.
Yeah. Because, save
course,
all the best stuff for you, our listeners.
Exactly. We were talking about digital detoxes and what we've been doing this month, either consciously or unconsciously, to spend less time on our screens. Oh, I mean, who wants to start? Is many ways into this.
So you've done this consciously, both of you. So that's really good. But I'll just say that I have done it unconsciously because there's so much other stuff going on in the real world that I don't have the energy, the spoons to go diving into Facebook. I'm just really struggling to imagine other people having lives,
yeah.
Which is weird. It's a weird
Not
thing.
Not weird at all. No, but I feel like that is exactly what you need to be doing when you need to focus on you and your life.
Yeah, sometimes it's really nice to make your world very small and intimate and limited. Though I did spend a weekend stoushing on Twitter. I quite enjoyed
doesn't
that.
Doesn't sound like you, Michelle.
I know, it's so unlike me to lay a trap and then go and see what's inside it. I just sent out a tweet about the National Party describing the new regulation from the budget that women don't have to name the father of their child, and if they don't name the father of their child, they won't have their child support payments docked, their DPB docked. And they described it as a tax cut, which is bullshit. Anyway, so I enjoyed a couple of days of just going... This is how I think Twitter works. You go, la, 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 la. And then somebody goes, rah, 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 rah. And you go, a pow. And they go, nyeh. And you go, kabow. And they go, nyeh. And so I just spent a couple of days doing that when I felt like it. It was really fun. It made me happy.
Accurate.
The other thing about Twitter that I really like is when somebody sends you a tweet that is just so ridiculous, you don't have to deal with it. You put your phone down and 2 hours later you come back and find that 47 people that you respect and admire have dealt to them.
Yeah.
It's really
done
nice.
The work for you. Yeah. what about you, Leonie? I know you had a week of no screens at all, which seems impossible.
None for entertainment was the rule because
it's
obviously...
the best screen there is.
And that is the point. I was thinking a lot about the episode of On the Rag that we've just recently filmed about being a woman online. Mm-hmm. And that just made me think a lot about my life online and then the amount of time I spend online and the fact that the first thing I do is wake up in the morning with my first alarm and look at my phone and then get out of bed an hour later.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And to every single time I do that, that's every single weekday morning, that hour feels like about 10 minutes as well.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
And then I've been sort of trying to figure out how to deal with problems with concentration. I have a real problem with concentration. I always have. And getting into the, what do they call it? Deep workflow?
Oh, yeah.
Or whatever.
Flow state.
Flow state.
Flow state.
I find that really hard. So I thought, well, maybe there's something happening in the phone light with, like, my brain that just I'm starting the day wrong by staring at my phone for such a long time. Mm. And I was like, well, why not just take it out for a whole week and see what happens? And I can't really speak to if it helped my concentration, but I got so many other things done and felt so much more engaged in my own life.
Wow.
That I was like, you know what, this needs to keep going because...
Great.
I don't want to, like, look back in a couple of years and think, oh, my God, I wasted 5 years looking at my phone.
Yeah.
Looking at other people's lives.
It's such a time TARDIS, isn't it?
Because
you do that thing of looking up and you think you've been doing that for 10 minutes and it's an hour. Mm. That you could have either been asleep for, set your alarm an hour later, or
got up and gone for a run. Well, that's it. I could do some exercise. I could make myself an actually healthy breakfast instead of... having coffee for breakfast like I do most mornings.
Yeah.
And I think addiction should be challenged, and I think a lot of us, myself included, are not particularly honest with ourselves about the things that we're addicted to that aren't necessarily cigarettes or alcohol or drugs. And I was like, I'm addicted to looking at nothing on my phone, like nothing, just scrolling mindlessly, and I don't want that anymore.
Totally. There's an empathetic, if you're an empathetic person, and I think we all are, there's a thing about reading somebody else's status updates where you feel what they're feeling for a minute. So in that hour, you have felt joy, sadness, frustration, anger, that doesn't actually belong yeah. to you.
Depending on the platform. Twitter, just totally. anger, lol, anger.
You're not looking at Twitter first thing in the morning, though, are you?
I just look at everything. Really? I scroll Instagram, then I go on my Facebook, then I go onto my Twitter, and they're all quite different. But Instagram's definitely the worst because it is the most mindless. That's the thinking and feeling nothing bit, which is what I feel is the biggest waste of my time.
And there's the two aspects to it as well, which I struggle with, is like there's the feed, but there's also the stories along the top, which is just like a Fox News 24-hour script, you know, it's like that. As soon as you're finished, there's 10 people have uploaded more things.
Totally.
And you can just watch them doing stuff. I just wanted to bring up a thing. When I wrote that story about the body positive influencers, there was an average, and I think this is like very conservative, the average Instagram user under the age of 25 is 32 minutes a day.
Oh, that
which
seems too
is
low.
8 days of the year. If you're over 25, it's only 24 minutes. You're there for slightly less. But I would say I'm clocking in well over an hour.
Yeah.
Because you're also, there's the TV scrolling as well, which kind of is like, you're not really doing either of them properly.
Yeah.
But I sort of had a similar realization. I think it was the long weekend that did it, when you just have slightly more time to yourself. Yeah. And you're like, what do I do? Where I couldn't sleep, and so my phone was right next to me. So I was like, I lie there, and I'm like, oh, I've woken up in the middle of the night. Should I look at my phone? Should I not? Should I look at my phone? Should I go back to sleep? I should probably just go back to sleep. But what if there's something on my phone I should look at? I looked at my phone, and then I had the worst broken sleep all night, and I was waking up every hour. And I thought, well, I'm awake now. I might as well keep looking at my phone. And I was taking screenshots of the things that I was looking at. And it ended up me looking at mobile phone addiction articles and help support at, what is it, 3:18 a.m. on Saturday morning. And then I started listening to a podcast from the Ezra Klein Show. It was Work as Identity, Burnout as Lifestyle. And I was just like, I need to change something. Yeah. If I can't get to sleep without listening to people telling me how fucked up my life my life is, and looking at like just horrible articles about how screwed up my brain is getting, something's not right here. Yeah. So I've done something quite, which is a bit stupid maybe this week, but I have borrowed an old red Nokia brick phone. It's the kind of phone that my dad has spare in his house for civil defense emergencies. Literally the same model, which I'm going to try. I'm going to swap the SIM card over, and I'm just going to try and leave my iPhone in my drawer.
Yeah, great.
For a month. And I'm already anxious about everything that I'm going to miss, which is so weird. It's so weird. But I think it's also like, I don't know, I like to follow a lot of like old reality TV stars and people like that. So I do have this excuse, I guess, where I'm like, it's for work.
Yeah.
I have to stay on top of this Jules Tocker eating lettuce in the car park. I have to watch everything. But the hit rate of the time I spend looking versus the time I actually see something that's worth covering is like, what, one in like probably 500?
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. It's hard. It's hard to know what to do because then I like talking to my friends.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's the tough one, is what the people in your immediate social circle, how they choose to communicate.
Yeah.
In my case, that's Facebook Messenger. So
yeah.
I'm going to be keeping that on my phone for a while, I guess.
I do quite like imagining, I always imagine the internet as a room. And I quite like, I think I can get quite disciplined at running into the room going, hey, this is what I'm doing. I'm going to have a quick look at what you're doing. Okay, see ya.
Yeah.
And get out. So get in, get out. Yeah. And I do find, we've talked about this before, logging out of the app so that you've got an extra step. You've got to put your password in to get back into the app. I find that really useful.
True. I forget all my passwords.
Just an
as well.
Extra step. Just, yeah. But I like it. I want to hear more in the next month. I want updates, please, on Leonie's concentration and workflow.
Yeah.
And how the red brick is.
Not only that, but at a fundamental level, I also really object to the fact, and this is, you know, not a new thought, but that companies like Facebook are paying engineers, marketing management, etc. They're paying them lots of money to figure out how to distract us from our lives. Like, that's the remit, right? Someone was telling me last week that the one of the CEOs or someone really high up at Netflix said that Netflix's biggest competitor is sleep.
Oh my god.
So these people are out here just trying to steal our time from us, including our time we should be sleeping, which you found out firsthand the other night. Mm-hmm. For what? You know, it's not to make our lives better. It's to make their profit margins larger. And I don't really want to play into that anymore.
It's
you
our
know?
Old filter, isn't it? Who benefits from this thing that you're doing? Who's making money off it? So, yeah.
The grimmest thing of all, I saw a gaming announcement that Pokemon Go is now releasing Pokemon Sleep, where you can, like, hook something up and you get, like, points or something for, like, the quality and length of your sleep, which is kind of like, on one hand, I'm like, maybe good to gamify sleep and make it, like, reward, have some kind of reward other than being, like, awake and alert and happy. But then also, like, I don't know if I could get to sleep if I'm thinking about, like, how many Pikachus I'm going to catch or whatever. I don't know how those games work.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's definitely hell. Yeah. We're definitely in hell. Speaking of hell, May has been a hell month for banning abortions.
Yeah.
In the States, but also opening up that whole rich vein of men who support that in New Zealand, or at least are opposed to women making the choice.
Yeah, we've kept that conversation really quiet. And when I say we, I don't mean me or you or any of you. But the conversation has been so quiet. We got those laws, when was it? 1984. Where, you know, it's still, abortion is a crime, but if you can convince two doctors that you will either die or go mad, you can have an abortion. And that has worked for the majority, not all women who want to have an abortion, don't want to become parents at that particular moment. And so it was like an open secret that we were making a law that's not about abortion on demand act like a law that sometimes worked that way, but not always. And was really difficult for rural women, really difficult for women with religious doctors, la, la, la. So, So people have been so quiet about abortion. But then, of course, America, and it filters back here, and you end up with people like Alfred Ngaro, who thinks that no woman has ever been treated like a criminal and would have absolutely no idea and can base that on absolutely nothing.
Yeah. And yeah, imagine having the confidence to say that in front of news cameras, journalists, and also just women standing in that media huddle. What?
Yeah, it is incredible, isn't it?
And he also, earlier in the month, shared, which he has since, I think, maybe taken down / apologised for, but in the kind of way of, like, I'm sorry, you're offended, I'm sorry, you saw it, I thought I'd get away with it, a post which likened abortion to the Holocaust.
Mm. Yeah.
And this is a man who is currently in Parliament in New Zealand, and we know that he's not the only man who thinks that way. It's quite scary to see the sort of the people are out again on Dominion Road.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Is that because of a religious thing, or is that just because it's in vogue?
So they've always done it. There's a clinic in Thames where they have always had protesters. There's a really nice chap in Dunedin who has a sign that just says dick with an arrow, and he goes and stands by the anti-abortion protesters every week when they're out. I think they only go out when it's fine. So there's quite a lot of downtime.
Today. We should really have a live stream.
And in fact, he was the guy. I've forgotten his name, and I will remember it at some point and stick it on our page. But he is also, you know, the protesters threatened to come to Clementine Ford's session in Dunedin, and they didn't turn up. But he did. He turned up with a sign that says dick with an arrow to point at the protesters who didn't come. Yeah. So he's
adorable.
And then
he just ended up accidentally standing next to Clementine Ford and causing a right mess.
Right.
And that was one of the things that I liked in Toby Morris's comic this month that he did with Emily Wrights, talking about how men can use their voices to support women and oppose these people, and getting out there seems to be one of the ways you can do it. Or just using your voice. I mean, I know that it's tense because it's like, this doesn't affect me. You don't want to sway out of your lane or whatever, but
at the same time, it would be nice to hear from the partners, current or former, of women who've had abortions who also weren't ready to be parents.
Mm, totally.
Very nice to hear from them saying, you know, this is why I'm glad that abortion is available in some capacity here, because I wasn't ready to be a parent for these reasons.
Right.
I want to hear those stories.
I also want to hear the stories from women like me who had an abortion and it wasn't a terrible event in their lives.
Yeah.
That it was a terrific decision that I have never regretted for a second.
Yeah.
And that there were parts of the process. I hated that I got pregnant. I thought that was ridiculous. So I was trying really hard not to. But there was no, I didn't even, you know, the thinking music didn't have to play for me to decide what I was going to do next. Mm. But I did have some really unpleasant experiences in the process. One of the things that you have to do once you have had a positive pregnancy test and after your two doctors have said, yes, you will go insane if you have this baby, so you will sign that off. You have to go for a scan to establish how old exactly the fetus is before they'll do the termination. And I went for a scan and it was a male, what do you call them, a scan operator.
Yeah,
I'm almost a doctor. And and I said to him, I am going to terminate this pregnancy. And he looked at me like I was evil incarnate and turned the screen that would show the ultrasound to my face. So I had to look
what
at it.
What a prick.
What?
And did not speak to me throughout the rest of the procedure. And oh my turned gosh. My head away and shut my eyes. Because I knew what I was doing. It was just, no, you're not going to make me look at that. But it was a really cruel thing, I thought, to do. And and so, you know, there was a moment, Alfred Ngaro, where I felt like I was being treated like a criminal.
Yeah.
Aw. Emotional, yeah. Because you also shared your story on the project.
Yeah.
More recently. Did you want to talk about the feedback that you got from that? Because this is 2019 now.
Yeah.
Which was also in itself an incredibly brave, bold thing to do, to talk about that. Did you know you were going to do that?
I decided in the afternoon that I would, I knew that story was happening, and I feel like we should normalise it, because for 13,000 women a year, it's a normal thing to do. That's a choice that we make, and there is no 100% safe effective contraceptive. So there, you know, if you ask a room full of people to put their hand up if their children were in part surprising, little element of surprise in every pregnancy, you'll find a lot of hands going up. Anywho, so the response from women immediately, so in the next few hours after that aired, the response from women was 100% supportive. Dame Margaret Sparrow sent me a beautiful email saying thank you for just being, you know, talking about it in really unemotional terms as a sensible thing to do for a grown woman. So I got really nice responses from women, and lots of women saying I went through the same process and I feel fine about it, or, you know, whatever. It was all very positive. Thank you for sharing your story. And every single, in the next 12 hours, every single message, either email, text, thank you, or
on your phone.
On my phone.
No.
And yeah, because you can find my number through my website. I'll fix that. And tweets were all about burning in hell and you're a murderer and, you know, what a disgusting human being you are. Lots of burning in hell stuff.
Right.
So,
can you burn in hell if you don't believe in hell?
I don't think so. Yeah, no. That's what I'm counting on.
Fatal flaw in that particular insult.
I like being warm. And, so I found that fascinating. Later on, I got some nice messages, you know, the next day or so from supportive men. But 100% of the responses from women were positive, and 100% of the responses from men were, you're a murderer.
Wow.
Amazing, eh?
Isn't that interesting? What kind of volume are we talking?
Oh, not that many. Maybe in the dozens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's too many.
I can't believe you got an SMS text.
Yes, I did. Challenging me to a public debate. You murdering bastard. Yeah.
Because he presumably is an expert.
Yeah, of some kind.
Cool.
Yeah. I don't know in what.
Yeah.
Not in being pregnant.
Yeah.
Who are these men just sitting at this, like, empty panel in some community hall just waiting for these public debates? Like, no one's coming.
Debate me, coward.
Do you think, I don't know what goes on in men's heads, though they quite like to tell you parts of it, but do you think that they at some basic primal level a bit frightened of women because we have the ability to create new human beings or not.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, that's a choice that they can never make. So there's a power that they can never have. I don't know if that's true, but it's just I'm so fascinated that the strongest anti-abortion voices are male.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know what? I was maybe going to mention this later when we do Watch Club, but there's this amazing monologue by Kristen Scott Thomas in the latest in the season two of Fleabag, where she basically talks about how menopause has freed her from pain. But she has this really amazing perspective on the fact that women carry pain with them right from the beginning. It's monthly. It's something that we always have with us. Men have to find it, so they invent war and rugby and all of these sorts of things. But it's something that we're born and have inherently, and that's like the source of strength. And then men have to like try and find fake ways of recreating the pain that women carry always.
Yeah.
I just thought it was such a cool perspective. I mean, eventually her point is then you go through menopause and you're free from it and you can be your own person because you're not defined by it. But I also like the idea that men are sort of inventing all of these terrible ways to be as strong as us.
Mm-hmm. I had a really fascinating conversation with my brother the other day about how men won't go to the doctor for prostate exams. And I said, you know, women don't have a problem with going to the doctor and having invasive examinations because from the age of about 13, we go, you know, once every 2 years for a smear. And maybe to solve this problem of men dying so frequently of diseases that could have been picked up through physical examinations, maybe what we should do is when men reach puberty, they should have to go for a prostate exam every 2 years. So they get used to the idea that every 2 years a doctor puts a hand or a finger or whatever it is inside your body and it's not weird. And that's just what, because women do that.
Totally.
We go, yeah, sure, put the instrument of torture and scrape some things away.
Willingly?
We realise that it's better to do that than the other thing.
But you do it.
And he was horrified that I had suggested that men every 2 years should go and have a digital exam in their bottom.
Isn't that interesting?
And I was like, but it could save so many lives. Yeah. And men got used to the idea like women do.
Yeah.
That this is cool.
There's also like we also have to deal with our genitals intimately, taking things out, putting things in, for the most part. I feel like that's not a crazy idea at all. I remember when Dom Harvey actually got a prostate exam live on Story, and I sort of guffawed at the time thinking it was sort of a stunty type thing. But now I'm like, good on you.
Yeah,
Anything to kind of raise that awareness.
Normalise that stuff.
Yeah.
That's what, you know, if there was a Ministry of Men's Affairs, that's what they should be promoting.
as the new Conservatives really want, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
This came out the other day.
But probably for different reasons that they're all for it.
I'm with you.
New Conservatives demanding that the government establish a ministry for men in New Zealand to ensure the well-being of all is being addressed. Someone should have edited that.
They needed a lady to do some proofing.
And it's, I mean, there's all the concerns underlying this are valid, right? It's like men's health, men's suicide, men's mental health, all of these things are things that feminism is also trying to help.
Well, I also think that they're just things that health is trying to address. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like if most of your issues are health issues that men are disproportionately affected by, I would say the Ministry for Health is trying very hard to address those for you.
Yes. Yeah.
And the fact that you are probably like privileged in our healthcare, if you are a cis white male, doctors and nurses are probably just pre-programmed or whatever without those sort of cultural biases to treat you very well and give you the best care that they can.
Yeah.
So the issue is really, is healthcare good enough? It's not the fact that men are disproportionately affected, right? Because they're still getting better care than everyone else.
Yes.
And it's not like the Ministry for Women is just looking at smears.
Gynecological.
Yeah. Can we just have all the money just for smears, please?
Yes.
Yeah.
The only problem we
it's
have.
It's an unbalanced premise.
And it's also ignoring the fact that lots of our diagnostic procedures are built for men, not for women. Like, women present differently with cardiac arrest from the way that men do. So it's more, if you're a man having a heart attack, the treatment is likely to be more efficient.
Exactly, yeah. The research is very much for everything.
I just think they should do a Ministry of Men, or Men's Affairs, as it used to be for the ladies. We should do it the same way. So people started asking for a Ministry for Women's Affairs in the 70s and got it in 1984. So they should wait 14 years.
Right, yeah.
It should be the lowest funded and lowest staffed ministry as the Department of Women is. And they before they get government support, they should go out and run a cake store, possibly because it means a sausage sizzle, to build this shit that they want, right? Because that's what women did. Women set up women's refuges on with volunteers and community fundraising. And so men should, you know, when they go, where's the men's refuges? I don't know, mate, where'd you put it?
Yeah.
So have a wee look-see. Make one, build one, set one up. Run a sausage sizzle outside Bunnings and have it and get back to us in about 14, 15 years. I don't mean to be a bitch, or do I? I think I do.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's not like they lack for women that support some of these harebrained schemes. Like, there's like all sorts of women that are sort of like, yeah, our sons are getting taught that they have to be girls or whatever. Yeah, like, heaps of women sort of subscribe to this.
My son's going to have to wear a dress to school.
Yeah, so just, you know, if that's what you're lacking in order to organise these things, just ask the ladies on the team.
To get it together.
That's the other thing that we should do, because this has been done in Australia, is the Minister for Men's Affairs should be a woman. That's because
there should be an advising panel of women as well.
Yeah.
It's the only way you're going to get anything done. Let's be honest.
That is true.
It's true. And who can understand men's lives more than a woman, you know?
People who aren't them.
It's a lived experience that really counts.
Yeah.
Finally, in a Gone by Lunchtime politics special, the Coalition Party. Brian and Hannah Tamaki are back, baby. Mm-hmm. Well, they never left. They've never gone absolutely anywhere for more than a couple of weeks at a time. So it was announced this month that, Hannah Tamaki's leading the party, which may or may not actually be allowed to be called the Coalition Party.
Oh, have they made a decision?
I'm not sure yet.
Coalition NZ.
Is it because they don't have the website?
Coalition NZ. Well, exactly.
Tim's got it.
Leonie's got one.
You've got the other one.
Owns three.
Oh,
you bought three?
You're amazing.
So which ones are under your...
After I saw Tim's and I was like, so I'll get the Coalition Party, because he just got Coalition Party. So I was like, I don't want them to get away with it just for lack of a simple preposition. But then I was looking at it and I was like, well, they're not actually called the Coalition Party. They're called Coalition NZ. So I was like, gotta snap up coalitionnz.org.
Yeah.
And coalitionnz.net.
Yes.
Because they seem the most likely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're not very expensive. So I encouraged, you know, as did Tim, lots of other people to like just pick up a domain name if they've got a couple of spare dollars. $17 a domain name.
That's
like for a whole year.
Come on now.
You know, there's a bunch of people, just get one each. They're going to be left with maybe coalitionnz.com, which is $3,500. I mean, not that that would really hurt them that much, because they've got lots of money.
I would like them to have to spell it with a K.
That would make me really happy.
Them and their flimsy apologies to the rainbow community.
The nice thing about them coming out with that non-apology, just spending some time trying to assuage some of the hate that they've thrown at the rainbow community, is that it shows you that the rainbow community has some political clout. That's the Pollyanna view, I think.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah,
It's very disappointing that the two people who were on hand to sort of receive this horrible apology and pitiful donation of $500 towards Rainbow Youth. Yeah, $500. We're from that community. That makes no sense to me. Like, I don't know why you would front up to that event accept that apology or that money on behalf of a community that has clearly been, you know, completely shat on by these people.
Yeah.
Without say, wide consultation
with
some of those communities, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I do love that Rainbow Youth said, you know what, we don't need your money.
Yeah.
Thanks, have it back. Which also the Destiny Church, Coalition NZ campaign manager, who is himself a gay man, gay Māori man, called them all sorts of names for not accepting the money and pointed out rightly, I guess, that Rainbow Youth's governance and organisation is mostly white. But then sort of used that to say, what do you say, they need someone on their team who might be able to educate them about what koha is. Mm-hmm. And I thought that that was like a really manipulative way of putting it, because koha is about reciprocity. And Rainbow Youth haven't given Destiny anything, so therefore they don't need to expect something in return. So they're well within their rights to be like, we don't want your money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was just like, Destiny Church like are predicated on manipulating Māori communities, I feel. And that's just like another extension of that. And it really fucked me off.
And it really shows that one of their core tools is money.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Throw money at
money
the problem.
Money and cultural manipulation is...
Yeah.
Seem to be their strongest.
Also, for an organisation that literally seemingly made it rain like $100 bills once, you could cough up a little bit more than $500 to buy the entire LGBT community. If that's what you're trying to do.
It's derisory. But so if you've got sort of a couple of bucks to chuck at Rainbow Youth to replace the rejected $500.
Yeah.
Yes.
Then look them up.
One of the things that I'm slightly concerned about with the pushback from the rest of the country is that people are tempted to paint Hannah as Brian's puppet. And I have an instinctive reaction to that, which is don't discount how powerful she is and how cunning she is all by herself, and that she's not necessarily the sweet little woman who says ridiculous things like, my core supporter is tall, dark and handsome and a really good kisser. I think she's actually really smart.
Oh, totally.
Cunning. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Totally. Her bid to take over the presidency of the Māori Women's Welfare League was like Svengalian.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty amazing. She didn't get away with it.
Yeah.
But essentially, the day after one of the branches of the Māori Women's Welfare League nominated her as the national president, 10 brand new branches of the Māori Women's Welfare League popped up out of nowhere, made up entirely of members of Destiny Church, in order to get 100 more votes for party president, Māori Women's Welfare League president, which was later deemed by a judge to be they were ineligible to vote.
Yeah.
But she thought about that.
Yeah,
that's some serious political strategizing.
Yeah, don't underestimate her. Yeah. Don't dismiss her as...
I totally agree.
...as his, little puppet.
I would like to know the strategy behind her saying her favourite thing to get at KFC is the beans.
Nobody likes the beans. There is no one who likes the beans.
The beans.
Do they? I don't know that they do.
I feel like I haven't been able to get the beans since
the 80s.
Like, yeah. Which is, you know, a cause for concern on its own.
Unless they've got, like, their own special... Rotorua branch that still does beans.
See, that's cunning, though, because she that's, you know, KFC on the one hand, mass appeal, beans, very niche. That's how clever she is.
It's true. But I would like to shout out H. McArdle, who sort of stepped up in the news cycle and spoke amazingly on their non-apology. And they said, I think he sincerely has realised, he being Brian Tamaki, that the impact that these words are going to have on the campaign rather than the actual world. And I think he wants the treats without doing any of the mahi. We are yet to see them actually engage with that community in any kind of meaningful way.
Yeah.
So shout out to H, a legend among us. Time for some cool tips. Do we have any cool tips of the month that we'd like to
Mine's
share with
literally
the group?
Cool.
Yeah?
But it's not really. Everybody else knows this, and I used to know it, and then I forgot. If you're going to the supermarket and then you have to go somewhere else after that, I'm now keeping a little freezer bag in my car with the ice those ice pack things so that I can buy stuff at the supermarket, go visit my mother, and then go home and my yogurt's not gone off. Do you know what I mean?
It is a literal cold.
Thank you. And it's not, I just, you know, when I'm leaving the house, I go, oh, I forgot my wee freeze bag, and off I go. Yeah.
That's a bit of planning, though. I'm still at the, do I have my bags? Yeah. Do I have any money? A great tip. What about you, Leonie?
I've got quite a sort of like a niche cooking tip.
Beans?
But it's beans. It's about how great beans from KFC are. So one thing, you know, in winter you make more soups and stews and things. And one thing since I stopped eating meat that I've discovered is that vegetable stock, as opposed to your chicken or your beef or whatever, it's not very tasty.
No, it is not.
So there are certain elements missing from things like soups that aren't as yum as they used to be.
I always made my pumpkin soup with chicken stock.
Yes, same. Yeah. I've always made vegetable soups and stews and stuff with. Anyway, I have discovered a tip that I read online that I actually have found works quite well is when you're making your veggie stock. And another thing I do is any of my bits of veggies that are left over when I chop stuff up, I have a bowl in the freezer that I chuck everything into until I've got enough to make a veggie stock. Then now the secret to a richer, fuller flavour, a little handful of prunes.
Excuse?
Come on now.
I know.
I can see how prunes. That works.
Yeah.
Because it's not too sweet, but there's a bit of oomph in a prune.
There's a sort of a... If you take away the sweetness from a prune, there's actually quite a rich sort of umami flavour to it. And it adds a whole something to a vegetable stock. And it makes the stock a little bit darker, so it looks more like a delicious, meaty stock.
This is good.
It's amazing. A weird one, but it worked.
That's an incredible tip. That's like a posh, proper tip.
That's a fancy tip.
That's my other favourite thing about like stocks and things. They don't cost anything because you're just saving food scraps.
This is the full promo for this podcast is the prunes. They don't need anything else out of this.
It's the best thing that's ever come out of this. This mess. Because prunes get bad PR as well, don't they?
They do. I blame Americans for the bad prune PR.
Because
it's the butt of many jokes in 80s sitcoms.
And it's because of their laxative, their fibrous. Everybody just associates them with having a really good loose stool.
But they're so delicious.
Yeah. So what's wrong with that?
No, that's a good thing.
It's fine to enjoy. People are spending money on diet teas that make you do the exact same thing.
You just need a prune.
We need to get the influencers next to prunes.
Delicious.
Where are you, big prune? Are you big prune money?
Sweet.
We'll be your first ambassadors.
Oh my God, prune's the official. Is that fruit? It is a fruit.
It's a fruit. It's a plum. Isn't a prune made of a plum? Mm-hmm. Isn't it a dried plum?
It's a dried plum.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Don't trust it. My cool tip is related to what we were talking about at the start of the podcast. I purchased an old-fashioned battery alarm clock to keep my phone out of the bedroom.
Good.
And true, I saw her do it.
Loving it. Well, yeah, I walked into Leonie at the time as I was buying, because I was at Daiso and I was, you know, classic 3 for $10. Can't go past it. Was holding the clock and the batteries and going, what else should I buy? When I walked into Leonie, who was buying 3 pairs of socks for $10. It was very
wild
exciting.
Times.
Yeah. I know. It was my big weekend.
Yeah, me too.
Lovely looking socks, by the way.
Thank you. Wearing them today.
She is indeed.
Oh, yeah, nice.
But it has actually, apart from if you can get over the trauma of the sound of that old, like, because you hear it click and it goes click, do, and you just go, I want to shut my eyes and go to sleep for much, much longer. But after that, I've realised the stillness and not having that urgent reach for my phone and just being able to, like, open the curtains, look directly into the sun like Pete Evans recommends, searing my retinas. I feel great. It's only been 2 days, to be fair. But I enjoy the kind of the physical ritual of, like, setting an alarm, flicking the switch. I don't know. It's just, I'm a huge fan.
This is good.
I do miss the tick. My old radio
alarm. Oh, does it tick?
Oh,
I can't be doing with the tick.
It ticks a little bit in a,
Seems weird. Does it keep you up? I know it can be quite soothing, I guess.
I find it quite soothing, and I do kind of stash it underneath my little Cubby.
They're all the same.
Sasha underneath me, hubby. Sorry, Joe.
Because I've got one that's battery operated that doesn't tick, and it's got, you can push the top of it and it lights up, so you can go, what time is it now? It's 4. But I dropped it, and it's a liquid crystal display, and I dropped it, so now some of the bars don't work, so you can't tell the difference between 6 and 8. Mm. So yeah, it's really tense. I should just throw that away.
Yeah.
Why do I still have that? That's really silly. Sorry.
Does it spark joy, though?
My ancestors believed that waking someone from sleep, like jolting them awake out of their sleep, was really bad for you.
Yes, because your soul isn't popping.
Because your spirit's gone off for a wander. Yeah. And you can do spiritual damage by yanking yourself awake again.
I feel this is true.
That's why I can't get into a deep workflow.
That's exactly what it feels like. Yeah.
It's the only thing you can do it's the only time in the army that you can punch someone as if they've woken you from sleep. You got a free pass on smacking someone.
But isn't
the
army all about getting woken up at strange times?
If somebody touches you to wake you up and you take a swing at them. If there's someone you don't like, you go, Barry, could you wake me up tomorrow? And you can smack them and they go, wow, it's waking me up.
Another cool niche tip for all you army listeners out there. I wanted to talk a little bit about an interview that you did, Leonie, for our television movie show.
Yeah.
No, it's not a movie. On the Rag, it's a web series. We just never know what to call it. We always pants it. Online video show.
Online video
Talking
series.
Talking Pictures.
You can watch it on the spinoff or on the spinoff's YouTube channel or on our Facebook page. It's everywhere. But you did an interview with Golra's Garaman, and she shared some very interesting things in the same week, or it was right before it all kicked off with the David Seymour menace to society quote.
It was the week before. Yeah. She told me before the interview started that she'd just found out that morning about the investigation that revealed a white supremacist Facebook group talking about all the ways that they'd like to lynch her, and like graphic descriptions of killing her that Paddy Gower had done for News Hub. Mm. And then the following week, David Seymour, in an interview with Sean Plunkett, described her, not them, but her, as a menace to freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Freedom. And so, yeah, so all of that hate that was already sort of being stirred up by this investigation and by revealing these people were out here threatening her physical safety, and then he tried to sort of act like she was the one that was a threat to people for trying to encourage
a discussion
about, hey, how about we don't let people get away with threatening and harassing people online anymore. That is supposedly the menace to freedom of speech and our liberté.
Oh my God.
And it was an interesting discussion nonetheless, you know, like she's very clued up on the real world effects on women and people of colour of online abuse, and you know, the numbers and the research, because she's got a lot invested in it, but she's also putting a lot of her time and energy into getting the message out there to protect people like her.
Mm.
But fuck, what a price to pay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's what I mean when I said at the beginning that there are some middle-aged white men who just cannot imagine being someone who's not a middle-aged white man, and not saying that's describing someone as a menace to freedom within that context.
A colleague.
Is just throwing fuel on a raging fire, and is going to have real-world consequences.
Yeah.
And what's that like? And they can't imagine it.
Was it Golra's or the other woman you interviewed who was talking about how the parallels with kind of war zone PTSD that people go through from absorbing online abuse?
Yeah, that was Golra's was talking about that from a piece of research that I've forgotten where it came from. But essentially the day-to-day of online harassment, if you're a woman or a person of colour, especially if you're a woman of colour, amounts to similar levels of stress that are found in people who are in active duty in war zones.
Mm-hmm.
So just existing online and that constant threat, it's the fight or flight that a lot of people who, say, have to be online for work, or they might be academics or authors or whatever, it's like people whose job it is to put ideas into the world.
Yeah.
have this constant fight or flight that people in war zones have.
I get that, because it's stuff that comes out of nowhere, doesn't it? It's suddenly it's in your inbox, or it's a comment at the bottom of a thing that you've put into the world, or it's just bam, 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 bam all the time.
And you'll know this as well, Michelle. Like there are times where you're like, I'm used to this.
Yeah.
And then there are times when your defences are down and it just kills you. It just destroys you.
You're not ready for it.
You're not ready for it. You're not prepared.
Yeah.
You're like maybe tired or emotional or whatever. And it's like that just doesn't go away. That never gets better.
And I think Gowrie's also talks about how you put the armour up, but you don't actually want to be that person with the armour up all the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because part of your appeal as a politician, for instance, might actually be that you can be compassionate and empathetic to other people.
Yeah. Mm.
Putting those walls up takes that away.
Yeah.
Mm. And you have to hear all the voices of your civilians.
Yeah, and you also, every time you get a comment like that, you go, that's a real person out there in the world. I wonder if they ever walk past them.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're ever at my supermarket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't know.
Well, speaking of that, something that really scared me on that sort of train of thought was something that surfaced out of Melbourne, or out of a forum. That horrible man, Roosh?
Yeah.
Roosh.
What kind of a name is that?
Roosh V, who's, what is it, I always want to say Return of the Kings, but I know that it's not that. Kings of Men, or some shitty group. They tried to come here a while ago. Return of Kings. That wasn't far away. He runs this men's fucking thing, and they have these forums that have basically turned into, you know, 8chan style Wild West. And there was one thread that was a sort of pickup artist guy in Melbourne who's listed all the places in the CBD where you can approach women or look at women or be around women, categorized by how easy it is to approach them, the kinds of women that they are.
And their score out of 10.
Their score out of 10. It's honestly
hot
skin
tips
crawling.
On what to do while you're waiting for these, not women, they're not really humans, are they?
They're targets. Targets is what he's called them.
And they're at libraries, supermarkets. Supermarket aisles are great because they're narrow. It's just so beyond.
Oh, yeah, the bottleneck theory.
Get a hobby.
They're terrible spellers, MRAs. There's got to be some Venn diagram that shows you that people who can't spell and MRAs are just, it's an overlap. And one of the comments that made me, because it was really frightening, to be perfectly honest, but one of the comments that I that made me snort laugh out loud was, girls are definitely hotter in the summer months. Like, that's just temperature science.
It's just,
it's not.
You're not wrong, laddie.
Yeah.
It's so creepy. But again, it's that scary thing of, I'm like, who are these people? Do we walk past men like this? Are they around? Are they in Auckland? If they're in Melbourne, why wouldn't they be here?
And I kind of want to think that there's four of them with 5,000 profiles.
Sure.
And they never leave their mother's basement. But we know that a woman a week is killed in Australia. A woman a month is killed in New Zealand. There is hate for women. So they do exist and they are real. And it's fucking terrifying.
Mm. Another scary corner related, I'm sure, quite clearly related, the incel community online. There's been an incredible feature was written for thecut.com about the rise in incels, involuntary celibates, who are getting plastic surgery, or at least considering it, and are doing many sort of photoshops on their own faces to look more like the Chads of the world, getting broader jaws and
so they can get a Stacey.
So they can get their Stacey's in the world. And it's just so...
They can get their sex prize. I condemn women for having sex, but yet it is my right to have sex with them. But how dare they have sex with people who are not me? I hate them because they're sluts, but also how dare they not be sluts with me?
And how dare you choose not to have sex with me?
I find that such a weird concept that you're angry with the whole half of the population because they have got together and held a meeting and said, we're not going to sleep with Brian.
Yeah.
Because I don't like...
deemed him too ugly.
We have his chin is too weak.
Terrible cheekbones.
It might be that he hates
none
women,
of us will ever sleep with him. And I don't care if he's a nice person and I don't care if he's educated and polite and he's got good manners. We're just not going to sleep with him because he's got terrible cheekbones. Yeah. Fuck.
All those in favour say aye.
And then they have to move on to the next one. It's a very long agenda. There's hundreds of men to get
through. It
takes
so long.
Exhausting. Yeah. That's what we're all doing. We're in the toilet.
That's exactly what we're doing.
Oh, God, you told
it's
them.
Just a long
Shit.
Scroll.
Tell them, Alex. Oh.
But mostly I come away with this. Obviously, the incel movement is very scary. You know, they mobilize in real life and they kill women, as we've seen. But it's so sad that these men feel... that this is the only way. Yeah. How do you not see past it? What I want to know is, like, does anyone leave the incel community? Do people, like, reform?
Oh, sure.
I guess it's too young at the moment.
Oh, I want those stories, though. I want to hear them.
It's not really, though. I feel like we're a few years deep in this terrible, terrible nightmare.
That's true.
I would read the shit out of something written by a former incel, reformed incel.
Something outside yourself is amazing. I've got friends who are single and maybe women friends who are single and don't want to be single and try to do the dating thing, and it's, you know, two sentences in, it's, I'll show you my penis. And it's, but they don't turn into humans who go, all men are evil because they will not have a relationship with me. It's, they go, I might take up gridiron. I don't know why I said gridiron, but it seemed like a nice idea.
You sure as hell do get together with your friends and have like a laugh maybe at the terribleness of dating and of the dudes that you see a lot on dating apps or whatever, because it's like a release.
Yeah. Especially if they've got a profile photo involving a horse.
Or a fish or top of
or
a
just
mountain,
a car. No person, just an old car.
Yeah, just whichever an old car.
Brum.
And do not think for a second, gentlemen, that we are not showing each other your dick pics, because that is the greatest conversation starter in any get together for a group of women friends.
Sometimes we play the memory game with them, we print them out.
Yeah.
And you have to remember whose dick it was.
It's a craft afternoon.
I mean, I think it ties in with, I should have put a link to this in our notes, but there was a story recently about how a lot of men don't have any friends and rely on the women in their lives to provide all the emotional support and all the forms that takes.
Yeah, yeah.
The girlfriend has to be the best friend.
I don't need
a
therapist.
The therapist, exactly. And I feel like that also feeds into the incel movement, in that you're not having people IRL to decompress with and go, I can't get a date. And I tried to talk to this woman and it went really badly. And like, I think laughing at yourself is really important. And you can't do that alone, you know?
Yeah.
And you can't do that when all you have to communicate with people is text online, because we all know that a lot of nuance is lost when you are only communicating in text. And
this is
everything sounds passive-aggressive and angry.
Exactly.
When you're just writing.
Yeah.
And so the guys on the other side of the world who are trying to be part of this incel community as well are just like, yeah, you're angry, I'm angry, we're all angry. And it's just like, nah, just find a friend.
Yeah.
Decompress with your friends in the real world.
Maybe do
Some
set up
late
the
starters.
Ministry of Men's Affairs and use it as a social network.
Just
have a cup
network.
Of tea.
A friend.
And if you are a man with lots of friends, then actually talk to them about shit.
Talk to them. Yeah, that's what we would like. Because, we would like them to talk to each other.
Like a male on the rag.
Oh, see.
Actually, no,
not angry
every podcast ever.
A not angry one.
No Joe Rogan allowed. But yeah, that is a fascinating feature. I'll post it in the On the Rag page if you haven't read it already. Very scary. What about Watch Club and Book Club? We are conscious of time. Michelle, you've got to flit away to the project soon.
I do, flitting. I am reading Leah McFall's Karori Confidential, which is just, for me, reading little 800-word columns that I've never read before because I live in the wrong city to read her every morning. It's just delightful. She is the crafting wordsmithery goddess.
Yeah.
I can't make, that's not a good sentence, but you know what I mean. She's brilliant, and it's so light and adorable and affirming. Mm. That's my going to sleep read at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Love that book. What about you, Leone?
I haven't actually read any great, like, works by women recently, but I am reading a fantastic book by Paul Beatty, who's an African-American writer, called The Sellout. Is a Man Booker Prize winner, I want to say 2 years ago. It's very hard to describe, but basically just like really strong African-American vernacular writing style, but it's about a whole bunch of things, including a black man who enslaves another black man.
Oh,
which is one twist. Of many quite fascinating yeah. parts of the book. It's super funny and super dark, and nice. Just one of the coolest books I've read in a really long time.
Yeah.
But Watch Club,
mm-hmm.
Fleabag season 2.
Oh, yeah. Did it all over the weekend.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
The writing is so good, I get mad about it.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
It makes you me know? Feel sick with jealousy when you recognise, like, oh, she's so good.
She's so funny. I recommend it to everyone, season 1 and 2, because actually when you put the two together, not that long.
Yeah.
Both seasons are only 3 hours each.
It's gorgeous length, actually.
It is.
Perfect length.
It is, except for if you want more. Do you know what? If I could have access to the Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind technology, I'd just wipe my memory and watch Fleabag over and over
again. That's a great idea.
Whoa. That's what I'd do with it.
Nice.
Of all the things.
I love her. I think Phoebe Waller-Bridge is one of our greatest writing talents
mm-hmm.
alive.
Mm-hmm.
And all of her characters are like me in a horrible way that I don't want to relate to, but I do.
I know, I find
it makes
that
me
awkward,
laugh
but yeah.
and cry a little bit.
Yeah.
But season 2 is definitely like a great antidote to season 1. So if you've only watched season 1, very dark. I could understand not wanting to revisit that world.
Mm-hmm.
Season 2, beautiful antidote. Still really unhinged, quite raw, very funny, but makes you feel like there's hope for us all.
There are some, like, you mentioned the Kristen Scott Thomas one. There's some, like, incredible, like, monologues as well. The one in the confession booth.
Yes. Very good.
And then
there's
what comes
priest.
There's a hot priest.
Hot priest in season 2. You don't have to be religious to appreciate this character.
Yeah.
It helps if you're a gay man or a heterosexual woman, obviously.
Mm.
He's not hot just to look at. He just is one of the hottest, funniest characters.
Oh, you had the
greatest, like, rom-com character.
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
Beautifully flawed, but, like,
nice.
He can get it.
Like it.
The priest can get it.
I'd also like to shout out, I've been doing a lot of other, I've watched Always Be My Maybe on Netflix,
so
Girls
good.
Trip, and Wine Country,
all
in a huge binge, and I highly recommend all of those things.
I love it.
That's fantastic. They're all lined up. They're all on my favourite list for when I have a minute. But yeah, I'm so glad that, good.
and also add in there, the wonderful woman from Jane the Virgin, her Netflix movie as well. Someone Great.
Yeah.
That is also a great girl gang story, very funny, very modern. Love it.
So I've watched Good Omens over the weekend and loved it. Miranda Richardson, Frances McDormand is God. I think Frances McDormand is God.
Yeah.
And if she's
her
not.
As her, playing herself.
Yeah, pretty much. God as herself. And we just, Jeremy and I decided that Michael Sheen was doing C-3PO throughout it all. and that David Tennant is doing Bill Nighy.
Oh my God.
You know that, it's just even more light and enjoyable and wonderful. It's just terrific.
I loved that there was a slight gay subtext to their relationship in the miniseries. It doesn't really exist in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least I didn't notice it, but it's maybe because I read that book for the first time when I was 11.
Yeah.
Probably was never going to pick up on that. But I thought that was delightful.
And can I just say that I tweeted Neil Gaiman and said, thank you, it's brilliant, and it made me feel really happy. And he replied to my tweet with, I'm so glad.
Oh my God. That's incredible. Sweet. Where do you watch that program?
Is it on Netflix or Amazon?
Amazon okay. Prime.
Yeah.
I downloaded
so much good TV.
Got
at the moment.
7-day free trial just to watch Good Omens.
Good job.
So good. And Handmaid's Tale is coming back in a day. Actually, if you're looking for a feel good, can't wait to wash down Chernobyl with The Handmaid's Tale. Let me tell you that for free. All right, shall we award our Kia Ora Queenies Kia Ora Queenie of the Month?
Yes, I want to award a Kia Ora Queenie to every solo mother in New Zealand who chooses, for whatever reason, to not put the father's name on the birth certificate. And I hope you're doing great.
Kia Ora Queenie.
Kia Ora Queenie. Mine is for the good bitches at Good Bitches Baking, who have been toiling away, cooking up, baking up sweet treats and delivering kindness all over the country to the people who need it. They were recognised, honoured by the Queen over the weekend.
Woohoo!
Very well deserved, and they're doing incredible work. You should go check them out. And if you're a baker, you should get involved.
Yes.
Nice.
They are the best.
My Kia Ora Queenie is Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Yes. I just think as an artist and a writer, she's putting stuff into the world that has a uniquely feminist perspective, and I think we all need that, and I love her.
Yay.
We love her. We love you, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, if you're listening to us.
If you're listening, call me.
Thank you very much for listening. Hope you're doing all right in the storm out there. Thank you to the Women's Bookshop for helping us out with this podcast.
Thank you.
It was going so well, and then I pantsed it. Thanks to the Women's Bookshop for supporting us. If you'd like to win tickets to their 30th birthday extravaganza, please check out our Facebook page. Thank you very much to Tina, our lovely producer, who makes this all happen. Thank you very much. We will see you next month.
Hey, Tina, marama.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-Off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-Off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spin-Off. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spin-Off member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spin-Off Podcast Network.